Rann against Acheson is our next case for argument this morning.
Morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Schroeder.
Morning. May it please the Court. My name is Bill Schroeder. I'm representing, of course, the petitioner, Stephen Rann. He was convicted some time ago in an Illinois court of two counts of sexual assault, one count of pornography. He appealed to the Illinois Appellate Court. He was unsuccessful. Ultimately, we filed a petition for a writ of habeas corpus in the Federal District Court. We were unsuccessful in that petition. This is the appeal from the denial of the petition in the district court. The heart of this claim is that my client, was rendered ineffective assistance of counsel by his previous attorney.
Counsel, I have a procedural question for you that neither side addresses, but which bugs me, and it's this. Under Stone against Powell, the federal courts cannot redetermine Fourth Amendment issues on collateral review. Right? That doesn't preclude an ineffective assistance claim. So a claim that my lawyer should have moved to suppress and didn't is technically preserved. But the substance of that claim is not preserved. Now, as I understand it, what happened here is that the ineffective assistance claim is raised, and the state court says, we're just going to go to the prejudice question. We find there's no prejudice because there's no violation of the Fourth Amendment. What interests me is whether that decision is reviewable at all in federal court, given Stone against Powell.
I would contend it is, Your Honor, because I think Kimmelman versus Morrison
Kimmelman and our ineffective assistance cases involve situations in which the state court never addressed the Fourth Amendment issue. Right? They involve a kind of claim where the ineffective assistance claim is raised in state court, and the state court says, lawyer didn't have to raise this. We're not going to address the Fourth Amendment. What happened in your case was that the state court addressed the Fourth Amendment and said, no violation, right? It's a substantive holding. It would be perfectly clear if the lawyer, to put this differently, it would be perfectly clear that if Rand's lawyer had moved to suppress initially, he would have lost because the state court's view is there's no violation of the Fourth Amendment. And then Stone against Powell would have absolutely blocked us from reviewing that on collateral review. I don't understand why it should be the case that the less competent the lawyer is, the greater our scope of review in federal court. It doesn't make any sense.
I think, in all honesty, Your Honor, that is, in fact, though, the way the law works. The less competent...
What case do you rely on for the proposition that if the state court resolves the merits, if it says you lose your ineffective assistance claim because no prejudice... And the reason there's no prejudice is we're resolving the merits on the Fourth Amendment claim. What case do you have for the proposition that if the state court does that, then the federal court can review the Fourth Amendment claim on the merits?
I would go back to Kimmelman in a sense.
Kimmelman is not that case. And I looked for those cases and didn't find any.
I think I would argue then in this case, Your Honor, that
I just wondered whether you had found any.
I do not have one.
You know.
I do not have one. That would be my honest answer. But I do think that the Fourth Amendment claim is reviewable here, and maybe the way I would approach this is to say that...
But that's what I don't see how. I understand how an ineffective assistance claim is reviewable if the state court doesn't address the merits. But when the state court decides the Fourth Amendment claim on the merits and says that's why the defendant loses his ineffective assistance argument, Stone against Powell seems to be right at the top of the ticket of things that are pertinent for us.
Your Honor emphasized, though, that in terms of the appellate court, the finding that there's no prejudice, I suppose the way I would then proceed with this is to say that's a factual finding. That's a factual finding by the Illinois Appellate Court.
And if it's a factual finding by the Illinois Appellate Court, then review is blocked by 2255E, which says we can't review state court's factual findings.
Well, we can review it if we show by clear and convincing evidence that it's incorrect.
But it's not. Making a Fourth Amendment argument is not a factual finding. You can't show that a Fourth Amendment decision is wrong by clear and convincing evidence.
No, but what about the prejudice aspect of it? That's where I would argue that this applies.
If we were to say that the prejudice inquiry under Stone, Strickland, is a question of fact and not of law, that would be a really dramatic curtailment of federal collateral review. It's surprising that the defense would want us to take that position, but we'd get reversed 9-0 if we did.
That may be true, Your Honor. I think the problem here, though, ultimately, is that the motion was never made by the counsel whom we would allege was ineffective. Since the motion was never made, the appellate court, in terms of whatever conclusions it reached, didn't have the benefit of a full and fair hearing. And that would, I suppose, be the argument. There was no full and fair hearing.
The question in Stone is whether the state court offers a full and fair hearing. And we've long ago held that Illinois offers full and fair hearings. That's why you can't get past Stone against Powell that way. And what's more, your client got an adjudication on the merits of the Fourth Amendment claim.
Well, I don't know if he truly did, Your Honor. With all due respect, I think the issues that we're trying to raise now on the Fourth Amendment claim, the basic issue on which the district court decided this particular case, the notion that a private searcher had opened this particular these digital devices, these memory devices, that particular notion, and the question, the broader question of whether this case falls under Jacobson or under Waller, which is really what I would argue is the issue now. Does it fall under Jacobson or does it fall under Waller? That turns on the factual findings that were made in the state court. And those factual findings, I would contend, have no evidentiary basis. There's no evidence at all. The state acknowledges that there was not an evidentiary hearing. The district court basically acknowledges there was no evidentiary hearing here. So we never had any evidence really presented on this issue, and that was because of the ineffective assistance that was rendered. So I would suppose, is there an opportunity for a full and fair hearing? Well, there's a theoretical opportunity for a full and fair hearing, but it's not an actual opportunity for a full and fair hearing.
Well, what further facts would have been developed that were not considered by the Illinois Appellate Court?
The problem is that there were no facts that were considered. What further facts should have been considered was exactly how did this memory card and exactly how did this zip drive, how did the contents of those become known to the persons who brought them in, SR, the child who brought
them
in?
Because they're on the film, or whatever you want to call it.
Pardon?
They are part of what they're presenting. They knew what was on it.
Well, how would they know, though, Your Honor?
The daughter
might know.
Was unfortunately pictured.
But it's not clear that she knew when she delivered them. Yes, and in fact, in her testimony that the state reproduced in its supplemental appendix, it's clear that she's pretty iffy about when these pictures were taken and exactly what. She knows in a general way that some pictures were taken. As to mother, well, if these pictures are, given the nature of these pictures, the argument that mother knew what was on them, how exactly would she know? He wouldn't be showing them to her. And to me, that the whole consent argument the state made that they brought up for the first time here on appeal falls on that notion, the notion that there was some kind of joint dominion and control over that family computer and over the zip drive. I don't think that goes anywhere at all, because he wouldn't be showing these kind of pictures to his wife. I simply don't think that's credible.
Yeah, well, it's curious how, for all those years, she knew nothing, but...
But she said that. That is what she said in the record. She knew nothing at all for all these years about what was going on, which raises the question, how did these pictures get on the zip drive? The appellate court says they got there because, as a matter of fact, she downloaded. But there's no evidence at all. And I would contend that, in a sense, there was never even a factual determination made in the state court because, as a matter of fact, no evidence was ever offered. There was no balancing of credibility or no weighing of the evidence. All we had was the appellate court makes this contention. Basically, it says that that they would never have brought these devices in, these memory devices. They would never have brought them in unless, as a matter of fact, they knew what was on them. But that's a non sequitur. They may have been guessing what was on them. And so I would go back. I'm sorry, Your Honor, my time seems to have run out here, so I'll stop at this point.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Seaburn.
Morning, Your Honors. Erica Seaburn from the Illinois Attorney General's Office for the respondent. May it please the Court. This Court should affirm the judgment of the District Court and hold that the State Court did not unreasonably determine the facts or unreasonably apply Strickland in holding Petitioner's trial counsel was not ineffective for failing to move to suppress the evidence obtained from the memory card and the zip drive that the police obtained from SR and her mother, Regina. I'd like to begin by addressing Petitioner's argument about the State Court factual findings. Now, the State Court made these findings, essentially, that SR and Regina knew the contents of the digital media that they brought to the police. Petitioner just hasn't met his burden of showing by clear and convincing evidence that these factual determinations were actually unreasonable under AEDPA. In Wood v. Allen, the Supreme Court addressed this point and held that it's not enough for reasonable minds to disagree. It's not enough that a reviewing court might come to a different conclusion in the first instance. As this court noted in Mahaffey, you only overturn a factual determination by the state court if there's a definite and firm conviction of error. Petitioner is simply inviting this court to draw different conclusions from the same set of facts. There's no dispute as to what the testimony was. The testimony is reproduced in the appendix. He just wants the court to draw different conclusions, and that's simply not enough to jump over the hurdles placed in his way under AEDPA. I would like to briefly address Your Honor's question about the Stone v. Powell issue. It was our understanding that Stone v. Powell was not a barrier here because he was raising this suppression issue through the lens of Strickland. The state appellate court held that the motion to suppress would have been futile, and under this court's precedent,
Do you have an answer to my question what sense it would make to say that if the motion to suppress had been filed and decided exactly as happened, we couldn't review the substance of the Fourth Amendment. But since the motion was made effectively after trial and decided after trial on the merits by the state court, we can review it. Is there any sense whatsoever to that?
Your Honor, I don't know. If the court would like us to do some sort of post-argument letter on this point, we could look into if there's any precedent on this point. It's not in the briefing, so I'm not really prepared to address Your Honor's question. I apologize. The state appellate court's holding would have, that the motion to suppress would have been futile, would have qualified as a holding on both the performance and prejudice prongs under this court's precedent in Gilbert v. Merchant. It goes to showing performance because it shows that he wasn't efficient for failing to file it, and it partially proves up the prejudice prong by showing that if he had filed it and the evidence had been suppressed, what effect would that have had on the verdict? Finally, I'd like to briefly address the private search issue. Petitioner points out that the clearly established Supreme Court precedent here would be Jacobson and Walter. Here, the state court's factual findings that SR and Regina knew the contents and that therefore the police did not impermissibly expand the scope of the private search makes this case more like Jacobson than in Walter. Walter provides a helpful negative comparison. In Walter, as Your Honor pointed out, the employees who conducted the private search had no firsthand knowledge of the contents of the boxes that they were about to open. They knew what the labels on the boxes said, but they didn't know what the actual films inside the boxes contained. It was not until the FBI actually put the films on a projector that any of those parties knew what was on the films. Contrast that to this situation. As Your Honor pointed out, SR knew what was on the memory card. As she testified, she knew that her father had been taking pornographic pictures of her while he sexually assaulted her. That was one of the first things that she reported to the police. So that contrasts unfavorably with Walter. And therefore, the police did not impermissibly expand the scope of the private search. In terms of the consent issue, we would argue that this could be an alternative basis for holding that petitioner should have been denied relief. Regina was petitioner's wife. She shared the home with him. There's no evidence that she did not have common authority over the household and the household effects. And there's simply been no evidence to the contrary. Unless the court has any other questions, we would urge the court to deny relief and affirm the district court. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.